This is Audible.
The difference between merely getting by and making a large fortune in your business is largely dependent upon your awareness of a few key strategies and actions that your competitors can't recognize or act on. Jay Abraham's Mastermind Marketing System shows you how to take maximum advantage of hidden opportunities, assets, and advantages you possess now. The advantages that all super successful people capitalize on as a matter of principle. He'll show you exactly, with step-by-step action plans, how to capitalize on those strategies that your competitors can't see. You'll discover a kaleidoscopic array of possibilities you can implement immediately to exponentially increase your success, income, and opportunity base. Jay Abraham uses time-tested strategies in a unique layered approach that will free you from business worries as they ironclad your future success. Countless business owners have gotten their businesses off the ground and into the stratosphere by following Jay Abraham's advice. Multitudes have doubled, tripled, and even quadrupled their sales or income with simple implementation of a few of the techniques contained in this program. The secret they know is this. 98 out of 100 people use tunnel vision in their own business endeavors, never looking beyond the traditional ways of doing business in their own field. Through Jay Abraham's experience in over 400 different industries and 10,000 clients, you will expand your view of what is possible and learn a myriad of ways to keep your clients coming back again and again for your product or service permanently. You will learn how to see opportunities differently than you have before, to remove obstacles and view things from a non-myopic standpoint. You'll uncover the small distractions and adjustments you can easily take to increase your business, not laterally, but exponentially. No matter what the size or current state of your business, Jay Abraham will show you how to get things done. In this exciting mix of studio and live recordings, the Mastermind Marketing Strategy will teach you that successful business marketing is about making connections. This program will make elegant solutions evident to you so that you can start looking at making important connections, project connections, business connections, and money connections. You look at things differently and gain the ability to think outside the box and look outside your normal range of business applications to find solutions, solutions that mean big profits to you. When you've got things clicking with the Mastermind Marketing System, there's no limit to what you and your business can do. And now, to get you started, here's Jay Abraham.
Hello, my name is Jay Abraham. For those of you who are unfamiliar with me, let me introduce myself and my expertise. I am considered one of the country's foremost marketing consultants. Frankly, what I think of myself is as a revenue maximizer, a money maximizer, a finder of hidden opportunities. I make money connections. I help companies and individuals in business all over the country and the world, businesses large and small in 400 different industries, identify and harvest their overlooked opportunities, their hidden assets, their underperforming activities, and their undervalued relationships. In the process, I'm very proud of the fact I've helped companies and clients find in excess of $5.5 billion in increased earnings and wealth, and I've made life a lot more fun and enjoyable and enriching for a lot of people. My hope today is to help walk you through the fundamentals of the success system that I have created, give you a short course primer in the art and science of maximizing your business performance, teach you all about how to put the power of geometry to work in your business so that you will be able to outperform, outthink, outmarket, outsell, out-earn, and out-enjoy anybody else in business you compete against locally, regionally, nationally, internationally. With that stated, let me walk you through what we're going to cover over the next few hours, why I've chosen to focus on those points, and why they're so critically and financially important to your future, to your income, to your wealth creation. First of all, I've been very fortunate. I've been able to look at 400 unrelated industries around the world. I've been able to work single-handedly with over 10,000 separate business owners privately. I've gotten to work with over 200,000 business owners, entrepreneurs, and professionals, including startup businesses in group setting. And in the process, I'm very fortunate. I've been able to identify and uncover the driving forces that made each one of their industries thrive. I've been able to figure out what the success process in each business or industry was, reduce it down to a universal principle that would work and perform equally or even superior for other people in other industries who applied it, put it together into really fresh combinations and hybrids that nobody else in the entire business world or entrepreneurial theater ever embraced, and teach it to people like you. Normally they come to me and they pay me very large fees, $5,000 an hour, or they come for a week and pay me $25,000. So today I'm going to try to compress what I teach people into a few powerful and actionable hours. I'm going to walk you through a very integrated system. It's going to lay everything out. It's going to layer it. It's going to connect it. It's going to tell you what to do, why to do, how to do it, and why it will work. And I'm going to prove it to you with stories galore of clients of mine and their successes by just changing a few simple elements of their business philosophy and strategy and applying what I teach them. Same thing I'm going to teach you in a very, very simplified manner in the next few hours. With that stated, let's begin.
I want you to understand, first of all, the key to J. Abraham. Key to J. Abraham is understanding the difference in leverage. How many of you here understand that there are two kinds of cholesterol, good and bad? Raise your hand. And that it's really bad to have too much of the bad, but it's really good to have a lot of the good. Well, there's two kinds of leverage, too, very much like that. There's good leverage, and there's bad leverage. Bad leverage is when you go in hock. You buy a piece of land, an asset, equipment. You make a purchase of something and you pay too much and you hope and you pray and you wish and you do everything else in hopes that it will either appreciate rapidly and you can flip it to somebody else who'll pay you more than you paid, including debt service, or it'll earn so much more than the monthly or the annual debt load and make a profit. And as long as nothing goes wrong in the economy, nothing goes wrong in the markets, nothing goes wrong with the performance or the value of the asset, you're okay. But if anything goes wrong, guess what? You get bit really bad in not a very, very pleasant part of your anatomy. The good leverage, which is the only kind of leverage that I deal with, is upside leverage. It costs you, irrespective of what kind of business you are in or going in, it costs you the very same fixed expense to dispatch a salesman or woman, whether they be captive, whether they be telephonic, whether they be subcontract, manufacturer's rep, whether they are able to contact 10 quality people or companies a day, 15, 20, 25. Costs the same fixed expense and opportunity cost whether those 10 or 15 people, they get 40% quality presentations, 50%, 30%, 70%. Cost the same to make the presentations, whether the presentations galvanize, polarize, really attract the heck out of the people, and they close one out of two out of three, four out of five. Cost the same whether they close one out of six. Cost the same to garner a new transaction, whether that client buys from you $100, $150, $500, $1,500. Cost the same to affect that sale, whether that client buys one time and never buys again, whether that client buys one time every 6 months, one time every 3 months, one time every month, one time every week. Cost you the same to affect the transaction, whether you sell one product or service and nothing else, whether you can figure out one, two, three, five other ways to get utility or residual value out of the goodwill, the distribution pipeline, or whether you get none. Same thing with other forms of marketing, selling, and revenue generation. Cost you the same to dispatch a sales letter, whether it affects a 0.5%, 1%, 2% response. Cost you the same to affect responses, if they're inquiries, leads, prospects, whether you convert 5% of the respondents, 10%, 25%. Cost you the same to attend a trade show, whether your banner attracts 1 out of 1,000 people walking by, 1 out of 100, 1 out of 10. Cost you the same time, opportunity cost, and dispatchment of human capital, meaning the people, the equipment, everything else you send, to utter whatever phrase you utter to the people who walk by your trade show, whether they literally come to you enthusiastically hoping you'll spend time with them telling them about the application of your product or service, or whether they're so nonplussed that they scurry away from you, or whether they're in the middle and they just give you their card in the fishbowl to win the television. I deal in only upside leverage. I have the good fortune of having been involved in 400 unrelated industries over the last 25 or 30 years. I've been able to step back and say that people in one industry pretty much all follow suit. And whether you're great or whether you're weak, plus or minus 20%, everybody in Industry A almost always drives their business primarily with the same basic revenue-generating mechanism. Industry B does about the same with their revenue-generating mechanism. Same thing in Industry C, D, E, and F. Not necessarily because the driver in A is only applicable to A, it may be more applicable to B, C, D, or E. Just they don't know it. Everyone basically is incestuous. You either work for somebody or use some other business as your model, and that's all you know. Well, I figured out that a success process that is as common as dirt in one industry can have the power, the profitability, the preemptiveness, meaning it can block or establish your superiority and your preeminence, of an atom bomb if you take it and other combinations from other industries and combine them, and you're the first or the only one to unleash that hybrid on the industry that does everything the same way. And I've been able to do that all my life, and that's hopefully what I'll teach you, at least first stage, how to do today. But I live in a world that says upside leverage is king, that you deal in what's called optimization. My career has not only spanned about 400 industries, but I've also had the good fortune of teaching, counseling, consulting, advising, collaborating with about 300 of the world's top consultants, trainers, authors, etc. They didn't come to me for their expertise. They came to me to help make their expertise more viable, to get more people to revere it, to get them preemption, to get them more compensation for when they did it, whether they were a consultant, whether they were a speaker, whether they were a trainer, to get the market to really revere the transactional value of what they did. So in order to help them, I had to learn literally what their technology and their methodology was, and then I was able to incorporate it into my knowledge base. Basically, my attitude on optimization, because leverage 101 is J. Abraham, and then optimization. Optimization, very simply speaking, is committing and resigning yourself that your goal in business is to get the maximum result possible from the minimum time, effort, expenditure, and risk. Now, it's axiomatic, it's obvious, but yet nobody steps back and thinks about it.
The goal I'm trying to make is the same effort, the same expense, the same advertisement, the same sales force, the same people, the same commitment, money, and time to an activity should and could and will, if you listen to what I share with you, produce far greater upside yield. And the numbers are dawning. You can go from getting X result to getting 2, 3, 5, even 21 times greater results from the same effort. And you can get those kind of increases, not just from one effort, but from each separate activity. You go out and run ads, if you can make your ads pull 2 times better. If you get lots of leads and you make your leads convert 4 times better. If you get those converted leads to buy 30% more. If you get those people who buy to start buying 4 times more a year. Look what the combined impact has on your bottom line and ultimately in your back pocket and in your bank account and in your wealth creation. So that's what we're working towards, getting you excited about harnessing the power of upside leverage in your marketing and strategic activities. The next thing I want you to understand is that your goal in business from today forward is to always, not sometime or occasionally, but always focus on the geometry of your business, engineering activities that produce compound breakthroughs and compound dividends every time you do them. Why satisfy with incremental gains? Why satisfy yourself with linear results if you can get exponential performance out of everything you do? Next point we've got to recognize. In order to gain great success in your business today, you've got to be able and willing to engineer true breakthroughs in the marketing you do, in the strategy you follow, in the innovations you introduce to your marketplace. Those three things, marketing, strategy, innovations. Those are the three key components that will have more to do with your producing and realizing massive and masterful results and successes and the corresponding financial wealth that comes with it. in your business enterprise than anything else you do. You know, as wonderful and brilliant as the human mind is, it doesn't always make the most powerful connections possible right away. The old forest for the trees adage, and I'd like to make a point of why that's important before we really get deep into this program. My job is being your money connector. My job is helping you make the money connections that nobody else sees. The simple, elegant solutions that will transform and transport the rest of your business life to extraordinarily greater heights than anybody else you compete against. And to make the point of why it's so possible and why it's so doable, I'm going to make a couple of actually hilarious observations of why man with all his or her brilliance and intellectual genius doesn't always connect things as quickly as they could and should, and why the ones that do make the connections own the world.
First thing I want to make a point to you is I'm thought of as a marketing expert, and I am, but I'm also, I think, a revenue and profit maximizer, a finder of hidden opportunities, overlooked assets, underperforming activities, and I'm hopefully one of the best connectors of dots you're ever going to meet. I see things in a super logical manner that most people don't, and I understand how to cut through all the forest for the trees. And I understand that the brain is such a wonderful, powerful, profound mechanism, but it doesn't always see the obvious. And I'll give you three examples to set the stage. In the very beginning, something like 2,000 years BC, man actually discovered ice cream. You probably didn't know that, did you? But it took almost 3,000 years before some bright person created the ice cream cone. Man came on this earth, and when he or she first arrived, we had grain, we had animals, yet it took almost 2,500 years before some bright man or woman said, let's take a slice of meat and put it between two pieces of bread and make a sandwich. In 1773 or 4, some brilliant person created the modern flush toilet. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? You want to hear something not very impressive? It wasn't until 1886 that some far more brilliant person created toilet paper. True. My job is to try to shorten the connection for you and make it in like nanoseconds, not decades or not generations. Okay, so let me tell you what I'm all about. You got to understand, we're going to talk about now the keys to maximizing earnings and revenue. And I want a show of hands so I can address and modify this. Hands. How many people in the room actually have an operating business, first or second stage? It's got revenue, it's got product and service, it's got some level of validation, and at least it appears to be viable. How many of you have a business that's in plan stage? You actually have a very well-conceived plan, you can present it, you got an executive summary, you got stuff that makes the case. Raise your hand. How many of you have this idea in your bosom that you really want in the most fervent, the most passionate, the most compelling way to figure out how to transform it from a vision to reality, to tangible dollar rendering contribution to the world and also enrichment to you? Okay. How many here, honest to gosh, don't yet know why you're here? And I'm not making fun, but you're sort of searching. You're looking for the right vehicle, the right opportunity, the right application, the right direction, the right clarification, whether you should be an entrepreneur or an inventor or go flee to the sanctity of an employed situation. Raise your hand. Okay, good. So I'm going to give you a primer treatise on the keys to maximizing earnings and revenue.
Well, my goal today is to make the business money connections a heck of a lot quicker, faster, and clearer for you so that it won't take you 10 or 20 or 100 or 1,000 years to see how to outthink and outperform not only your competition, but everything else you've ever achieved in your life. We're going to now set about making more money connections in the next few hours than you've probably made in the last two decades in your business life. Now, how in the world do you, sitting wherever you are, in whatever industry you're at, whatever city you're based in, how in the world do you engineer true breakthroughs? I've studied the top performing businesses in 400 industries, and guess what they almost all have in common? Almost every one of them. They are the companies that produce and engineer the most qualitative and consistent array of continuous breakthroughs in all those three areas. They produce more marketing breakthroughs more continuously, more strategic breakthroughs more continuously, more innovation breakthroughs more continuously. Now, how can you easily, quickly, and immediately become just like those people? Sitting where you are in whatever city you're in whatever industry you are, spending every hour of your day right now trying to just deal with the alligators nipping at your feet or other parts of your anatomy? The answer is simple. You immediately resolve that from today forward, in order to engineer true breakthroughs in those three areas of your business, you must travel outside your industry or your current business to look for the breakthroughs. Now, what does this mean? Think in your life about times when you traveled with your family, either for personal or for business reasons. Certainly, you've traveled outside of your city before. Probably, you've traveled outside your state. And most likely, you've traveled outside of your country. Every time you traveled away from your comfort zone, from your current locale, weren't you fascinated to see how many different ways there were of thinking, of climates, of dress, of culture, of lifestyle, of values, of religious beliefs, of architecture? Well, when you travel outside of your industry, the same phenomena occurs. You start seeing all kinds of different ways other people in other fields of endeavor dealing in different dynamics accomplish something. How many different ways they found to uncover and target and acquire leads and convert them to clients and customers. How many different ways they found to sell them. How many different ways they've uncovered to sell them more things more often. A great point of reference here, and this is very, very exciting, liberating, and fascinating. The odds are high that you unintentionally and very, very well-meaningly have limited and restricted the amount of customers you have, the amount of product services they could buy from you, the frequency of times they could come back and repurchase from you, and the amount of referrals and other ancillary and windfall business they could be producing for you each and every day of your business life. And the reason that you have unintentionally restricted and limited it is that you don't have a clue yet how many easier and more powerful ways there are to get them coming and returning and buying and getting excited. And that's what we're going to cover right now. The next thing you got to realize is that in order to borrow these success processes from outside your industry, you've got to switch your thinking from what I call tunnel vision, which is basically business myopia, spending all your time and focus thinking just about the way that you and everybody else in your industry does business, and move over to what I call funnel vision, which is the ability to funnel all the success processes, all the super higher performing strategies from other industries and businesses, and funnel them together into hybrids that you alone in your industry understand, recognize, and employ and deploy. Things that you alone use and all your competitors in your field don't have a clue. That's how you leave them basically choking on your dust.
Now, if you're going to optimize, which Abraham says you have to do, you cannot optimize until and unless you first step back from what you're doing and you evaluate and recognize the vast majority of superior performing options and opportunities and alternatives available to you. And you can't do that if you spend your whole life looking internally at what you're doing. I call spending your whole life basically trying to improve what you're already doing funnel vision. You got to transcend that. You got to travel outside your business. Then you got to travel outside your industry, and you got to cultivate what I call funnel vision. You got to funnel the success processes that are superior to yours into your business. And you can't do that until you start looking at not what you're doing, but what the outcome of what you're doing is all about. I teach understanding the transactional equivalent. For example, I'll give you a quick piece of profoundly powerful marketing, selling, and success advice. Whatever product or service you think you sell, you are wrong. People don't buy products or services. They buy the result. They buy the benefit. They buy the advantage. They buy the enhancement. They buy the enrichment. They buy the protection. They buy the entertainment. But they're not buying a thing. They're buying the result, the thing at work in their life, in their business, brings to them. Okay. So you got to decide you're going to go for upside leverage. You can't go for upside leverage until you first figure out what in the heck you're doing. Until you figure out what you're doing, you can't figure out how much better you could do it or the equivalent. For example, you may run ads in a magazine or a newspaper looking for leads because that's all you know. Well, first thing is, how can you make ads pull better? But the second question to ask is, do I want to make the ads pull better, or do I want to find a higher performing, superior yielding, more qualitative and quantitative producing way to generate leads? If the answer is the latter, which I think it should be, don't you? I mean, to means to an end, the ad, who cares whether you stop running ads if you can find a way to get leads better? And the first approach might be to say, who else in the world of business, not just in my one little vertical field, but who else in the world of business does lead generating or the equivalent? Because the equivalent is a lot of other things. And saying, okay, all these 25 or 125 or 525 industries have other means of doing lead generating. Then saying, what are they? What do they cost in time, in opportunity, in risk? How do they do? And you can't do that until you study the success processes outside your business.
A couple of points that are very important. Most people in life spend all their time doing the same things that everybody else in their business does. Why? Because probably part of your model for how you built your business came from observing how everybody else in that industry operated. Well, if all you do is follow the same strategy everyone else in your industry follows, if you all try to get customers and clients the same way, if you all sell to people through the same basic approach, if you all basically adapt the same mindset and the same philosophy, guess what? All you'll ever expect to do is maybe be a little bit better, 10, 20% better, or 10 or 20% less. You may not have as much capital. You may not have as much passion yet. You may not have as much of a staff. So if you all try to do the same thing the same way, you are limited and you are in dire, dire exposure of being compromised. Conversely, on the other hand, if you decide that you are going to be the only player in your industry who's going to identify and borrow and then harness the success processes from all kinds of other industries, you'll know about different ways that you can actually make your company, your business, your practice perform masterfully and massively better in bringing on new clients, in selling them more things, in selling them more often, in getting those clients basically working harder for you than any advertising or any marketing effort you can possibly imagine. Understand this also. In order for you to maximize the performance of everything you do, which is how you basically get to geometric growth, you've got to understand the science of optimization. Optimization is a science I learned many years ago from the work that I did with W. Edwards Deming's organization. Deming was the one who taught the Japanese in the end of World War II how to go from basically producing patented mediocrity to producing some of the highest qualitative and economically advantageous products in the whole world. He did it by teaching them the same thing I'm about to teach you, the science of optimization. What optimization is nothing more than resigning to yourself that from today forward, you are going to get the highest and best. Highest and best is always the phrases you want to indelibly embed in your mind. The highest and best performance, results, outcome, productivity, yield, strategic connection from everything you do and everyone you do it with. Let me give you a little story that will help you understand highest and best. Those of you who have any familiarity with commercial real estate, you may own it, you may have bought it before, you may have been involved in a commercial real estate transaction. When you buy raw commercial real estate, or when you buy even developed commercial real estate, and you bring in a commercial real estate appraiser to help you value what that real estate is worth, to help the bank figure out what they can afford to lend you in mortgage, they do not look at that real estate in terms of what it is today. For example, if you were in Beverly Hills on Rodeo Drive, that prestigious retail street, and across the street from one prestigious store, let's say we're across the street from Tiffany and Company, great big jewelry store, prestigious, prime. If across the street there was a semi-vacant lot with a beat-up 1,000-square-foot ramshackle tattered and disheveled little beat up house with no paint on it, and you wanted to buy the house and the lot, the commercial appraiser would not value that at just what a silly little 1,000 square foot two bedroom house would be worth. He would look at it at what it would be worth if that house were leveled, if it were developed to its highest and best use, which may be a high-rise office building or a mega shopping center or a restaurant or even a parking lot, because in Beverly Hills they get as much as $30 a car per day just to park and spend your money and shop. But the point is, the commercial real estate appraiser would look at the highest and best use of that land and that location for the maximum financial opportunity. You have to agree to adopt a similar attitude in looking at every element and every activity in your business. You got to ask yourself, what is, operative word, what is the highest and best use of this activity? What is the highest and best use of this effort? What is the highest and best use of this opportunity? What is the highest and best use of this expenditure of time, of people, and of my most precious capital? When you ask that question of yourself, you've got to then be able, in order to optimize what you're doing, to be able to comparatively evaluate the spectrum of superior performing options and opportunities that are available to you to choose from. You can't know the best options and opportunities available to necessarily do something like bring on more customers, clients, to get customers to buy more, to get people to refer more, to get them to come more often, until and unless you first look at all the ways other people in other fields of endeavors, i.e. other businesses, other professions, have uncovered and perfected ways of doing it. Till you know how many better ways there are, you can't choose the best way to do it for you. All you can do is what you've been doing, which is doing what everybody else in your industry has followed, which is the same basic way of generating customers, sales, etc. So I'm trying to get you to become an optimizer. I'm trying to get you to realize highest and best use of your time, your opportunity. I'm trying to get you to recognize that out there, there are, believe me, dozens, if not hundreds, of better ways than you're following today, and we're going to get into a very stimulating introduction of what those ways are in a very few number of minutes. Talk a little more about the concept of working on the geometry of your business. It's very powerful and yet very simple, and the most delightful aspect of it is that not one in 100 of the people you compete in understand it, recognize it, think about it, act upon it. Simply stated, most people in business try to grow and sustain their enterprise by dealing with it in a linear, in an incremental, in a very traditional sense. They try to grow 10% a year. They try to basically make things work a little bit better. When you work on the geometry of your business, you try to get many different activities or elements all to improve their performance at the same time and combine together to compound benefit. It's like money compounding tax-free. When money basically has to be paid taxes on, it doesn't grow anywhere close to the way money that's taxed either free or tax protected, tax deferred in a pension or profit sharing account, for example, grows and compounds and grows and compounds and grows and compounds. Well, the same concept of geometric compound protected growth is what we're going to work on in your business. It's bringing not one activity to bear, but bringing a dozen different activities at the same time, all to perform better in a combined way that they, number one, produce geometric growth. And I'll get into the example of that very shortly so it'll come alive. Number two, so they're all working together to overlap, to envelop, and to bring the maximum impact possible from every single effort imaginable. You're hitting people from many different factors at the same time. The military has a great phrase for it. In war, in battle, they call it force multiplier effect. F-O-R-C-E, multiplier, M-U-L-T-I-P-L-I-E-R, effect. And it's bringing lots of different activities to bear at the same time and hitting people from many different fronts, hitting them in the front door, the back door, for the frontal attack, the surprise attack, from the air, from the land, from the sea, at night, during the day, in groups, hand-to-hand, with pre-launch missiles. And it's hitting them from so many activities combined that it impacts in a combined geometric effect to decimate, to render ineffectual, and to dominate the enemy. And if you can think about it in a little bit of a militaristic sense, your goal is to outthink, outmarket, outimpact, and literally to outperform your competition from not just one point. Being a better salesperson or selling organization than your competitor is certainly impressive, but all that's going to give you is 10 or 20% increase. If you're selling better, if you're bringing customers in better, if you're converting them better, if you're maximizing them better, if you're keeping them longer, if you're getting them to buy more things more often, refer more people, all at the same time combined, and you're getting 10% better here, 20% better here, the combined effect becomes geometric. It's no longer linear. It's no longer 10 or 15%. It starts increasing and growing in multiples of hundreds or thousands of percent. And it's the way I have been able to pilot personal clients I have advised to growth levels in the 10 and 20 and hundreds of time greater. And everyone says, how can you do that? How can one company perform 100 times or 1,000 times better than another when most of them don't have any great buying advantage, when most of them don't have a lot more capital, when most of them don't have even more people? It's because we, you and I together from today forward, are going to outthink and out-strategize and out-geometrically perform everyone else we go up against, because we're going to use the power of geometry. We're going to basically make exponential growth the way of thinking in every activity we do and every decision we make. Let me make the concept of thinking outside the box, of engineering breakthroughs, of developing funnel vision, of traveling outside your industry, and of growing your business geometrically by using the success approaches and processes outside your industry and bringing them home to roost. Let me make a couple of points real clear, and this will grab you in a very exciting way. First of all, let's talk about one of the greatest success stories of the 20th century, Federal Express. Before Federal Express came, the only option you had to get a package somewhere overnight was to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars taking it to the airport and giving it to the airlines to put on an airplane and seat almost and have it hand-delivered. Federal Express transformed the whole paradigm of modern-day small package shipping, and they did it not by looking internally at how everybody else in the shipping industry was doing things, but by breaking through and going outside their industry, traveling outside their field, and borrowing the bank clearing process from the Federal Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve Bank, the only way you can get millions and millions of checks cleared in one day and all processed and debited and credited is by having a hub and spoke system. Totally like what Fred Smith did with Federal Express. He took the very same model that the Federal Reserve Bank used to clear checks in all kinds of banks in all kinds of cities and states and towns and municipalities around the country and get them all cleared and processed overnight. And he borrowed it and transformed it into the shipping system he used of a hub and spoke. That's why everything goes to Memphis. It's the very same thing. So if it wasn't for the ability to borrow success practices from outside his industry, Fred Smith would not be a multi-billionaire. Federal Express would not be here. UPS wouldn't have copied him. Emory wouldn't have copied him. A whole multi-billion dollar industry wouldn't exist. That's case one. Case two, and it's a funny one. You may not even appreciate it, but you wouldn't have roll-on deodorant today. You wouldn't be able to get up in the morning and put a little squick under your arm and go off to work if it weren't for somebody ingeniously borrowing the ballpoint pen concept from the Parker T-ball jotter. And those of you who are too young to remember the Parker T-ball jotter, it was one of the first rolling pen inks. It replaced basically cartridges. It was the one that basically gave you the ability to continuously and level apply ink so that people could have an inexpensive, disposable writing instrument. That same technology was borrowed, and that's how we got roll-on deodorant. And finally, to our great delight, we would never even have fiber optics and all the extraordinary breakthroughs they gave to telecommunications today if we would have left their development to the telecommunication industry. Why? Because fiber optics were first discovered and perfected in aerospace, but telecommunications borrowed the technology, converted it and adapted it and adopted it and applied it to what they're doing. We have to decide, you and I today, that that's exactly what you're going to do in your business, no matter what industry you're in, no matter what market you address. You're going to start borrowing success processes from outside your field. You're going to funnel them in. You're going to modify them and combine them into hybrids, and you're going to unleash them to an unknowing and unsuspecting and unprepared competitive market, and you're going to own your market very quickly by doing it.
Next process of J. Abraham 101. You want to be massively successful, you want to be competitively superior, you want to dominate, you want to run rings around your competition, you want to be the competition, you want to own the market, own the sector. The way to do it is to commit yourself and your business, current, future, or the glint in your eye or the flow in the bosom of your heart, to the fact that you're going to constantly commit to engineer the maximum quantity and quality of breakthroughs continuously in the following four areas: marketing, innovation, management, strategy. Fastest, easiest, most infallible way to favorably change the result of your business is to change your strategy. And yet most people don't do that. They're tactical. Do you understand the difference between tactic and strategy? Yes, no? Tactic is just a means to an end. It's not the big picture. It's not what you're trying to get to. It's not the whole integrated, optimal purpose that you're trying to really operate this business for. Until you have a masterful strategy, and until every activity you engage in that enterprise is a driver integrated to bring about this big, powerful strategic result, you are sub-optimizing. You are losing upside leverage. At best, you're basically losing potential. At worst, you're basically going to die. You got to decide you're going to engineer breakthroughs. If you study every great company that not only endures but explodes upwards, they do this. Now, marketing is a very over-intimidating, far more complexly perceived function than it should be. What it really is the process of being able to do two things concurrently: revering and articulating and demonstrating and conveying the tangible, measurable, viable benefit of your product or service at work in somebody's life or business in a way that the recipient, first of all, fully appreciates the enhancement it can be to their life or the protection, and that they desire it so badly that they wouldn't possibly choose, number one, any alternative, and number two, nothing, which is what a lot of people give their market the choice of doing. Innovation can be high tech, can be very complex and very sophisticated, but all it really is the ability to bring greater advantage, benefit, enhancement, protection to people's lives. If you have a manufacturing process that can save a ton of money in producing a product, but you don't take some of that price advantage and pass it on in one form or another to your market, whether it's in reduced prices or adding more benefits or advantages or options or bonuses or protections or warranties or something that makes the end user, the beneficiary, then you're really not being innovative. Innovative is bringing greater advantage, greater benefit, greater something to the puzzle. So you got to be innovative, you got to have breakthroughs. Now I'm going to talk about working on the geometry of your business. The truth of the matter is, it's easier to be geometric than it is linear or arithmetic. It's easier to grow and bypass complete steps. It's easier to go from 1 to 10 than it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The reason, and if anybody knows very much about my background, I'm very proud. I have 10,000 success stories around the world, and we stopped counting at 5 or 6 billion. And I'm very proud of that. And I have really, truly, a number of companies that have gone from 500,000 to 7 million in 9 months, and from 300,000 to 25 million in 2 years. And everyone thinks, Scott, you must be brilliant. Actually, I'm super logical. I know how little productivity and geometric or exponential power most companies allow or accept in what they do. I know that most people in the world don't purposely get up in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to spend the rest of my life, mortgage my house, dedicate my life and my career to making a fraction of the income I could, to building a business that's going to have a minuscule portion of the impact in the world that it could, to end up with 1/10 of the buyers, the clients that I could, to end up having a net worth and an asset value that's so nominal that it's so much less than it could. The only reason people could possibly purposely accept that kind of a substandard yield in fulfillment and impact and market you serve, in wealth you create and revenue you generate, is that you don't know how much higher and better performing alternatives you have for the same time or less, for the same activity or less, for the same effort or less, for the same capital or less, for the same distribution channels. I'm trying to be a little bit redundant because I want you to realize that it transcends everything. It doesn't matter. It all works. You just have to understand how to take what I'm about to share with you, what I'm trying to attitudinally impact you with, and translate it over and basically adapt it, adopt it, and interpret it to the area of business you're applying it to and the stage of that business you're at right now.
Now that I've laid a basic foundation, let me start introducing you to J. Abraham 101, to my success and effectiveness and what kind of a philosophy I follow. I've got a few cornerstones that I've built my philosophy upon. They're very simple, but I guarantee no one else you compete against understand it. And once I lay them out, build this foundation and connect you to it, you'll never approach the concept of business. You'll never approach the concept of money making. You'll never approach the concept of building an enduring customer or client base the same way again. So first things we have to appreciate and understand and agree to is that you can't go outside and introduce a lot of new breakthroughs until you first maximize what you're already doing. When I come in and look at a business that I'm going to work with, I say to them, look, whether J. Abraham is in your life or not, right this moment, you've got activities in play. You got money being spent. You got people being employed and deployed. You got promotions going on. You got sales activities, whether it be salespeople in the field or ads running. They're going on right here and now. Before you can ever build new breakthrough activities into your enterprise, you got to start with what you're currently doing, and you got to realize, is it working to maximum? What am I doing? What am I spending money and time on? You got to be able to identify and isolate every revenue generating critical customer building, money making, and business success activity you have consciously or unconsciously put into play that you are committed to, that is going on with or without your conscious activity, whether there are people that are calling for information, whether there are people walking in to buy, whether there are people dealing with your customer service people. With every one of those, you've got to decide and agree you're going to maximize, you're going to optimize, you're going to figure out which ones are working best but not being maximized, and you're going to do more of those. Which ones are a waste of time, effort, and you're going to stop doing them, and you're going to replace them with better and superior performing alternatives, and which ones are actually toxic and unbeknownst to you because you've never monitored them, measured them, analyzed them, and tried to improve or replace them. Which ones are actually bringing you down slowly but lethally so you can stop them and replace the effort, the time, the people, or the activities with replacements that can do so much better. So first we're going to maximize what you're already doing and committed to by making the things that are performing well do better, doing more of them. Things that are not performing well, either replace them or improve them. And we're going to try to look at how we can make the people, the money, the expenditure perform at best at all times. You accomplish this, again, by borrowing the success processes other people are doing. For example, let's say that you have a team of salespeople in the field, but they're not performing well. Well, the first thing you got to decide is it the people? Is it the process? If it's the people, you want to replace them. And I look at it as if, let's say you had 5 salespeople in the field. I look at those 5 people have been entrusted by you with 5 parcels of rich farmland to till, to nurture, to harvest, to bring in very bountiful crops. If they're only bringing in a fraction of a fraction of the crop yield that that territory or that market or that industry or that day or that effort could yield, and you're not getting greater yield, you got to replace the people with farmers who really understand or want to do it. That's the first thing. If, on the other hand, the people are good, but they don't have the right methods or the right strategy, you've got to decide what better strategies they could be following that would get far greater yield for them. How do you do that? It's by looking at other people in other industry who are much more successfully selling and asking yourself, What processes are they using? What sales approaches are they using? What sales training have they put their people through? And identifying the answers and then modifying those answers over to how it best applies to you at a point of reference. Every success and correspondingly every failure in business and every activity can be boiled down to a driving universal principle at work. There are success principles. There are non-success principles. I guarantee you when you start imposing upon your business this kind of a judgmental criteria and you start saying, okay, what's the driving principle that's making this element of my business perform as it is? You will see, wow, there is a principle at work here. Not necessarily a positive one, but a principle. If you isolate and identify all the highest performing success principles from other industries and you reduce them down to their universal core, their basic element, you can easily apply or adapt or adopt or import and borrow and funnel them over to you. And when you do, it's going to be very exciting. But your first thing is you got to figure out what's working, what's not. And whatever's working, you got to say, am I working it to its fullest? Let's say there's one salesperson who's great, for example, at opening up new accounts, but you have him or her managing existing accounts most of the time. Well, doesn't it make better sense if they're 10 times better than everyone else in your organization to try to get them to open all kinds of new accounts and let other people manage them for you? Because all of a sudden you could be 10 or 20 or 30 times better. Let's say that the approach you're using right now to identify prospects to convert is very ineffective. Let's say you're calling cold on every company trying to find the handful that are viable prospects. Well, if you can find that another company has figured out how to, first of all, identify and rent a list of qualified prospects, pre-call them with a phone organization that gets secured, confirmed appointments, and that every one of their salespeople, they get 25 appointments a day and they're all confirmed instead of your salespeople who are calling cold on 20 people a day that don't have a clue of the least likelihood of even being prospects. You want to replace ineffectual, you want to replace suboptimal approaches or activities you're doing with better ones. And all you have to do is look outside to how all kinds of other industries and all kinds of other companies are doing it and borrow those forwards.
Most people go about optimizing their business the most ludicrous way possible. They start reaching outside for breakthroughs before they first of all stabilize really the foundation of what they're doing. J. Abraham 101 says the first thing you do to grow your business, to solidify it and enhance it and advance it, is to maximize what you're already doing. You cannot maximize what you're already doing until you first really break it down and isolate. This is where Deming comes in. All the revenue processes at work. What I learned from my work with Deming, and I've been able to my great, great appreciation and delight to translate to revenue generating side, is that any revenue generating activity can be broken down to about 15 or 30 sub-processes that are all integrated into a dynamic system at work. Most people in business, even ones who are sophisticated and MBA trained at Harvard in marketing, don't learn to look at this. Let me give you an example. One of the companies I counsel is a public company. It's one of the big radio aggregators, and they have about 400 radio stations. I'll go into a market with them, and I'll look at 40 different salespeople, and we'll look at the process of enhancing the revenue of their radio stations. Well, I won't just look at, well, gosh, we've got to make you better salespeople. Let me tell you what I learned from Deming about process improvement, because this is going to be a mind blow that's going to drive you to greater wealth, greater success, greater impact and impressing of financial sources, lenders, capital sources, and greater competitive advantage. Okay. Process Improvement 101 says that, first of all, you can identify and isolate every revenue-generating process. Once you do, it can be, first of all, identified, isolated. It can be quantified, measured, and improved. Now, I'll use my example now with that stated. If you start analyzing, remember I said earlier in optimization you had to find all the alternatives, all the options, all the spear ways to do something? You do that by figuring out who's got better performing strategy, tactic, principle, all kinds of elements, and then borrowing them and incorporating to yours. Now back to my story about the radio chain. Okay, I'll go into a market. I'll have 40 salespeople in a market. First thing I will look at is not how to just blanket, generic, abstract, globally improve sales. I'll break down every integrated, what I'll call PowerPoint, every leverageable process and sub-process in the whole transaction. For example, one of the things they do, but they never thought about it, is some people very big part of their business, go out and they target large non-agency represented accounts that they can sell. They also target large agency represented accounts. They also target small agency represented. They also target small non-agency represented. They also target various industries. They also target people for special events. That's one cluster. Another sales process that's critical. Some people are very, very good at opening new accounts. Other people are very, very good at maintaining and reselling new accounts. Other people are very, very good at selling against very steep competition. In the media, it's ratings, or it's radio against TV, or it's CPM. Some people are very, very good at selling when they have really bad ratings. Some people are very, very good at getting referrals. Very, very, very rarely are all of them good at everything. Even rare does anybody in management ever look at all these processes. I want to know, first of all, who excels at each one. Normally it's like the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. When you got 40 salespeople, you can only find 3 or 4 in each category that are dramatically, profoundly, geometrically superior. For example, in opening accounts, you'll normally find the top 2 or 3, they're not just 5 or 10% better, they may be 500 or 1,000% better. Well, first thing you want to do, if you find ones that are 10 times better than the worst or the least performing, you want to figure out what in the world they do know, apply consciously or unconsciously, that makes them that successful, so you can teach it and translate it to these people so that you can bring these people up. If you find the 5 top performers in a category internally, this is considering you have a sales force, I'm just using an application, I'll take it external in a minute. You want to teach the top performers what the other top performers know, because it's always going to be different. It's going to make the top performers even greater in their performance, and normally the 80-20 rule applies there too. If you got 4 people that are doing 80% of the volume, if you teach them how to be 20% better, you're going to probably get more yield than if you teach the other 80 how to be 50 or 100% better. But you got to look at those connections. Next thing I'm going to do is look at who's so good, because I'm going to ask a question. Why is it written that a salesman or woman has to be a master at all trades? Most people have territory representation. We'll have the poor, lowly salesman or woman or rep have to open accounts, go to all kinds of special types of accounts, sell all kinds of special different products. When in fact, if you find through this process analysis, maybe one person is 10 times better at opening new accounts, but he or she sucks at maintaining them because it bores them. Maybe somebody else is incredibly great at selling certain kinds of products or certain kinds of markets, but it's terrible at selling all markets. Well, why let everybody operate mediocre? Why not consider, maybe, having the person that's greatest at opening accounts go out and open accounts and flip them to the people that are good at managing them, people that are best at selling specific products or markets, doing that and flipping them to people to manage them, and just using logic 101, because that's one small infinitesimal way that you end up starting to work on the geometry of the business. You start not engineering incremental gains, but exponential. You go from being everyone being the same 10% good to being 500% better. But not 500% better in one category, but maybe in the 30 categories you identify that I guarantee that most other people in the field of endeavor that you are pursuing haven't even thought to look at. And even the ones that have thought to look at it don't have a clue what they're looking for. It's exciting, isn't it? Okay, first thing you got to do is maximize what you're doing. Now take the same philosophy, but take it external. So now you got a business, or you're going to start a business. You want to figure out how many other businesses, first of all, in your field have figured a better way of doing something, and what it is, and how you can export it, import it into yours, basically how you can apply it, adapt it, adopt it. Then when you're done with that, that very, 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 very minuscule opportunity, then you want to transcend that and look at the world. Look at the world globally, look at the world industry-wise. Say, okay, there's 1,000 different industries. How many different ways do they go about targeting markets? How many different ways do they go about making presentations? Oh, by the way, back when you're breaking up these sub-processes, you can go very deep, and actually, there's enormous leverage and geometrical impact in it. For example, when I was interviewing one of the groups at this radio group, I found out that, first of all, the way different people targeted was pretty profound. One had a very scientific approach, one had a very haphazard one. Well, the scientific approach, upon my analysis, and I'm very analytical and very measurable and quantifiable, was about 20 times more viable, more productive, more profitable than the haphazard one. Another one, when I started looking at them, I figured out They had a great strength in securing interviews. Once they targeted the audience, they know how to get on the phone and get interviews that got 10 appointments. 10 times better than the worst one. Well, first I want to know what they did different, how, whether it was conscious or not, and I do that through a Socratic interview. Then I want to know what in the world I could take from that to apply it to everybody. Then I want to know why everyone else shouldn't be learning from them. Then I found that somebody else was about 25 times better, literally, at preparing a written confirmation that followed a verbal presentation. Normally in the radio business, and I'm just taking an industry, you make a presentation, somebody thinks about it, they don't give you the clothes, you got to follow it up with a presentation.